Now, I remember the one to look into the presentation. I'm sure it was another tough one to ask. Mnet has presented their said they are saying. It's up to you now to question their saying. If you got questions, but if you understood them, it's absolutely no harm. There's no rule of parliament. It's saying 100 people without asking them. You might as well understand what they said. Members, it's your turn. Rochen, Shin, Lisoma, Stein, Schneemann, and Mroto in the absence.
Just one question for clarity. On slide 23, point number 3, on the last line, on the description already aboard, and then analog STB, then pay for a second DTD for pay TV for STB. I just need clarity. If people already do have Mnet or multi-choice, the decoder, it means, does it mean that they don't have to buy the set of boxes? Or I don't know, I didn't know that you had an analog STB and then also then a pay TV STB. If I remember correctly, last time when you were here in Parliament, you said that if I already do have a decoder, then we do not have to worry about the set of box. But what does this statement mean? Can I just get clarity on the statement? Thank you.
Danke, Melfoshin.
Thank you, Chairperson. There was a couple of questions. I was interested to hear about these integrated TVs. Can you just give us a bit more detail on what they are and will they be imported to South Africa or will they be locally made? And is that should we integrated TVs or should we just go straight to digital? You know, obviously we get a lot of questions from people and it's nice to know that. On the Soweto trial, I was really interested in your training of the community support person. Can you tell us how long it took this person to get up to speed to be able to support people? Was there criteria in terms of their basic education or didn't that matter? And how technologically fast were they? Is there an age thing there also? You know, if they're over 50, they needn't apply. I'm trying to figure out how long it would take to train all the people that we need. I think that
you must ask all the digital questions, don't leave it to them, to me. ask your question.
I think take that basically to your own. Thank you.
That Honourable Tegana is not here, does not give the freedom of not speaking close to the mic.
No, I'm holding it now. Thank you, Chair. And thank you for the presentation from MultiChoice. Just to pick up from Honourable...
Let me help Honourable Member. They won't sue you anyway because you've got the right to say anything here. But it's eminent, not MultiChoice.
No, it's a same difference. Yeah. Chair, in terms of customer service food soldiers, I mean, if I may use that term, it seems like it works for you. I'm not sure, it's not directly, I'm making a comment that I would like the DOC to note it, the comment actually. The country then, in terms of customer service, DG, to borrow from lessons of MTN, because I think they've got a lot that we can learn in terms of other challenges that we are preempting. But yeah, no, let me stop there. But I'm mindful in terms of the role that post office needs to play all the, around that. May I just be informed here? What's the difference from the two tasks currently set top boxes that we have? There's a silver one, which is the old model, or all the first generation, if you can say, in the SA, and there's the other one, the black one. What improvement then, which would give me a better understanding that I don't need to have another new, set top box in terms of the FDTT. Chair, thirdly, I'm just trying to get a very comfortable way of raising this one. That in your presentation, you said it seems like also you do have an option not to use Fintech, signal distributor. If that's the case, why then are we here as a service provider in terms of the channels now? Because I want to, why don't we also as government, the two-pronged one which goes to the DOC also, why then we didn't preempt that there's another option, how do we then, I would not necessarily call the inverted commas potential of being undermine the intention of government, let me put it that way. But I'm sure if the DOC is better placed in terms of also elaborating on this one. Three, which is my last point. One, appreciating in terms of the things that have happened and the things that were lacking behind as government in particular. But I didn't also get an appreciation from your side, because as government, you need to consult with all the role players and also to make sure that even those who are running a business in terms of the service provision and also government catering through SABC now, catering for those who cannot afford, as it may, that one would have loved to hear that you do have the sympathy of understanding the limitations that we have as government. I think basically without picking anyone, although I'm not saying that our entities should be relaxed in terms of also closing the gap in terms of meeting the target that the government has set, because there are other implications. So I'm saying in the quest of you making money generally now with other private service providers or commercial service providers, that because there is a fora, why don't they also, with our technical know-how and experience, assist government? Or is it because government then, inverted commas, doesn't listen to us, knowing that we are a highly regulated country. So there will be other limitations in terms of the process, progress there, around the time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Schneeman, Notted, Shin, and Kita.
Thanks, Chair. Just comments. I think the presentation from MH has raised something again, which has been raised a number of times today, and I refer to particularly page 23, where they again talk about key successes, or key for success, the success of the DDT, is one, the pattern of migration, which would obviously be determined, as they say, by households, by consumers. And the point I was raising here, which I think I've raised earlier, but it's the whole issue around the consumer awareness program. And some of us were talking about it while we were having lunch, that if I don't know what this is all about, I'm not going to bother to buy it, because I actually don't want to spend money on something I don't know about, and secondly, I don't want another box cluttering around my lounge. So. And the only way people are actually, because you can have all the infrastructure, but if people don't buy the boxes, it's not going to work. And that's the whole issue now. And so it goes back, and I'm just raising this because I'm going to throw this back now at DOC. It's around the awareness campaign. That is a critical issue. And I'm pretty much certain that if we had to walk out of here now and we had to go into Hadley Street. I am pretty certain that a large number of people that we speak to wouldn't know what we're talking about. I just want to say something here that I think the awareness program that we were talking about that has been started, some of us were just talking about saying, where is it? And somebody mentioned to me that no, it was apparently some color adverts in the newspaper or full page adverts. All I'm raising here is re-emphasizing the point that's been raised here, is this whole aspect of consumer awareness. Because if that doesn't take hold, it's not going to fly. And I thought I would just raise that. This idea that Mnet is putting forward about the community service representatives, maybe just explain to us who's going to pay for that, who would pay their salaries or stipends. Maybe you could just explain how you think that would work. And maybe while I'm on this point, when they talk about the potential to create 24,000 jobs, where do they locate those jobs? Is it at a particular community level? Are they looking at ward level? How are they looking at that? Because I think that would be quite interesting to know. And maybe this is something that that DOC might want to also answer at some stage. Hopefully they'll come back to us a little later today. But I'm just wondering whether in this whole process, whether anybody's actually considered and realized the fact that we have community development workers in every single ward, and we have ward councillors. And those are the people at this stage who are the busiest on a daily basis in working with communities. And if nobody thought of this, I think that there should be a strong emphasis on ensuring that ward councillors are aware of what the whole DTT migration process is, because they need to be talking to communities and assisting. It's a program of government, it's a program of our country. And then we've also got the community development workers. And I would imagine that the more people involved in this whole process, the more the country and citizens at large are going to be aware. So I wanted to raise that point as well. Then just something I wanted to ask. I think I've been covered on this needing to purchase a new set-top box. I was surprised. I've got so many boxes. I don't want another one. But I'll wait for your answer on that. And again, I think in presentation, again, it's come up with ICOSA and some of the other delays that have taken place. And we raised that earlier, that as long as these delays exist, we're not able to move properly. So I thought I'd just touch on that. I just wanted to ask a question. Because yesterday we heard that, I forget which presentation it was, but one of the presentations, that generally we find the higher income earners in the country are moving over to pay TV. But it's that group that don't pay TV licenses. Because they say, I have a decoder, I have a decoder, I'm paying a particular television station, therefore I don't need to pay a TV license because I don't watch SABC. But in fact, SABC is available on their particular bouquets. And I'm just wondering whether, in terms of TV licenses, fees, whether we shouldn't be saying to MultiChoice that maybe they should also be requiring it when somebody comes to take out a subscription for their service, you must produce a TV license. And if you don't produce your TV license, you can't get the service, you don't get a license. And then at some stage also, put in place where you can actually then ask the service, the pay TV service provider, to actually collect your license fee. So it's adding on, whether it's R5 a month or R10 a month, you simply add it onto your subscription, and they simply pay it over to the SABC. Because one of the dangers, possibly, that could happen, and the SABC were telling us, given the funding difficulties that they had, they were raising this with us yesterday, that they may not be able to straight away increase their number of channels. And that could also see a number of people moving to your pay TV channels, because they're going to get a wide selection. And then you're going to have the same anomaly of people saying, well, because I pay for pay TV, why should I pay for a TV license? But in fact, they are able to view the SABC channels. And I'd like to hear Emmy's views on that. Thanks, Chair.
Maybe the question must go to this Muscat rule. How relevant is it in the new environment? How is the Muscat rule going to be applicable? Are you going to carry everything from SABC? All their channels? How is it going to work? Is it still relevant? Or this should be the matter of commercial arrangement between the relevant, because you see, my problem is that you put a regulator which put regulation which does not finish obligation. If you say ATV carry SABC, what does that mean? Because you see, there should be another obligation for that SABC and halfway and so on. I think that's the issue which Shimon is raising. We understand why mass carry was put in. We understand that. And we also understand sometimes these people, they don't pay their TV license. They must carry even the free to air is all cut off. But the reason of must carry was that people must continue to have access to free to air. Now, where is the balancing act? My problem is when there is no balancing act in this thing, they just lose. Because you see, the initial understanding of must carry was that South Africans must not lose out on free to air because they haven't to go to pay TV. In the context of the universal service access. But if you go through the regulation as it stands now, it's half SABC. You see, it's all loose in such a way that SABC has got all the obligation of dealing with a particular matter, which I think moving forward, if you were saying like yesterday, you were saying community TV can go to anyone and negotiate to be carried in their boxes and so on. You see, that argument in trying to balance that also, for a certain extent, SABC must also be allowed to engage on negotiation or discussion, probably, and so on. But I understand the issue will be told that there is a regulation, there is a legislation, and so on, which to me sometimes does not make sense because the things are not seem to balance and so on. But I think MNET should be able to respond to that in the original question asked. But I'm just saying, my question in addition, are you going to carry all the 16 channels free to air of SABC? Is it possible that you can do that? What is the regulation saying with that moving forward in the new environment? Is anything said by the new regulation of DTT in relation to mass carry? Because now it's a new multi-channels environment. So what is the new regulation saying? Those are the issues probably maybe the regulator must enlighten us so that we understand that it's clear there as we move forward and so on. I've got main thing.
Chair, thank you. Yes, again, I'm a bit marginalized. My questions have been asked. Thank you for the...
It's deliberate. Honourable Rutua was the first one, but was not here. I got put her in the last.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for the presentation. I did get more answers from the presentation than I had questions. So I've got one comment and then one, again, not a question really, just a request. We obviously as committee have to do have ongoing discussions with various entities. And one of the things, well, two of the things that is serious that we need to look into going forward is obviously the consumer awareness issue, but it's also this issue about the assistance once these things are up and running. And I'm very interested in getting a copy of, and this is where my request comes in, a copy of your community support representative, which you've indicated you've passed on to DLC. I think, and I don't know if I'm speaking to the entire committee, but I'd like to get a copy of that, so that when we interact with DLC, that we also pick up from your experiences, and we then sort of guide the final decision into an acceptable direction. The comment that I've got is, and it's from my own personal experience, everybody agrees that content is going to be king in terms of getting a subscriber base. I want to put it to you that currently, I don't know what's in your business plans, what you've got planned for DTT, but there's certainly in terms of content, there's a bit of a lack of content currently. with the absolute number of repeat that you've got, which I see the SABC and ETV, by the way, have started copying. I get lots of people that when they learn on the Portfolio Committee of Communications, it's an issue that they raise with me. Now, whilst for somebody like myself, it's perhaps important that there are some repeats because we're almost never available to watch TV. PVR has made it a little bit easier, but they never have the time to catch up on everything that you've recorded. However, I'd want to put to you that if that is your business plan going forward, then you are probably going to not have a viable product as you may believe that you will be having. Thank you, Dan.
Keelan.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I also just wanted to say that if the questions that I'm posed is just to understand a little bit better. It was a very good presentation, but I would like to ask you, you paged to your last page your internet project plan outline. What is it, am I correct that what you're saying essentially here is from the date of the DSO period gazetted to the date of the actual launch cannot be less than 6 months. Is that what you say? That's the first thing. So if we take it now and we start with ICASA having given us earlier today an indication that if all goes well, we will see ICASA regulations published in December. Then it means the DSO performance period should be collected by the Minister in January. And only then will we achieve June. So that is what you're essentially saying on this page. So for every month of delay, this outline has been pushed out further. So if the regulations don't come in, if the gazette is not published, if there's any delay in any of these other activities, then it's going to just fall further behind. Okay, that is the first thing that I wanted to establish. Jefferson, the second thing is, and I have established that through their nods. The second thing that I wanted to know is...
What were you saying?
No, I confirmed that my understanding of the project plan was correct. Second thing, you've also stated, specifically on page 23, that this awareness program is very important, and that you say that viewers will have to be convinced. So this is the push and pull issue that we've dealt with yesterday as well. And that there should be a strong consumer launch. Now, if we look at the other countries and global experiences. To what extent can we learn from our African neighbors? And to what extent how long ago have they launched? And what successes have they achieved? And is there any of those sort of launches, et cetera, that we could learn from that was quite successful and others less successful? For instance, I'm interested in the two most, the countries next to us, and that is Mozambique and Namibia. How long and how recent did they launch, and what is the implication? Because I believe also going forward, if we delay in our rollout, by the way, are they going to be late on the ITU date, region one? And what will be the implications if we are falling totally behind? Even, what are the implications? I believe that there will be distortions, there will be cutoffs, there will be cross, sort of, Centec could also have highlighted that, but from your perspective. And then lastly, your page 10 referred to the impact of delay already on your business. But it's also not only on your business, as I understand it, because it's also for South African consumers. People who have to replace sets had to buy effectively sets that and STDs that will be outdated soon. So they have already also incurred losses, and also the technology is going to become outdated. Now, you have quite a lot of, I'm always interested, your bouquets, some of your bouquets seem to be very popular in even in low-income areas. If you travel on the, it's the N1 in Gauteng, you can see some of their very modest environments. They have their little dishes, etc. To what extent is it going to have a meaningful impact on that sector, and what portion of your business model is actually serviced in the sort of poorer areas? And how will this impact on their planning going forward, if you could give us an indication of that? Thank you, Chair.
Morotua?
Thank you, Chair. You know, what Mnet was talking about in Orlando, Zimshop, their experience in Zimshop deficit reminds me of our visit. I think these are the houses that they are talking about.
We'll talk about why is it?
No, Zimshop is where we went.
Or not White Seed.
White Seed is above it, where I stay.
Oh, because it sounds the same to me. Mshope White, you know.
Now, what we were told today is that that transmitter next to New Canada makes it possible for those houses to access them. I want to know if I don't remember very well whether that was a Fentech transmitter or it is a transmitter that was put up by other people or yourself or whatever. What is going to happen then to that? And then, you see, the issue of that was just mentioned by Honorable Killian of the low earners that have got dishes. I don't know whether you have heard about this. Because what we gather is that everybody is interested to have a dish. Not because they are going to be paying continuously just for the few that they have when they have a dish, and they don't continue contributing to. I don't know whether that is true, because that's what is happening in Seoul. Do you see, I'm speaking from experience, not Lana Chepes. I'm talking about something I know. Yeah. Now, in that instance, to me, something should be done. Shouldn't be in that manner. Somebody just spoke about the licenses. Some people think that it's not necessary for them to pay the SABC licenses because they have decoders. That also somehow to me is distorted. I don't know whether there's a way of addressing that. Since yesterday, I haven't heard of any person who was giving us their presentation who has mentioned what I just heard this morning. Yes, on page 5, it's fine, I understand after the analog switch off what is going to happen. And the gradual fading out of analog. I don't know whether it's my ears, did I hear you properly when you said, in actual fact,
the set-top boxes are also going to be phased off at some extent. I just needed clarity on that. Because nobody spoke about this, you see. They're from yesterday. I don't know whether I am. And I think people need to be educated on this. Because no one wants to be going in and out, crossing in and going out. People use must have something that is going to be sustainable. On your page 7, where you speak about these countries that Honorable Killian was talking about, you speak about a new content rising uptake, and you say the decoders there are retailing. Now, we're not talking about set-top box. We're talking about the decoders. Yeah. And this issue of the set-top box and the decoder, are there similarities there? Because we must understand exactly what we're talking about. Because yesterday, what we were talking about is the government, that is compliant to ITU as a country. And now we are hearing the MNET trying to explain to us what the difference is. And I needed to understand very well. I tell you why I'm asking that. I'm asking this because the decoders that we have, Honorable Sona was asking about the silver and the black. We do have challenges, you know, and I've a serious challenge nowadays on since I had HD PVR of the I don't know whether it's caused by the transmitter or it's caused by network, but it freezes regularly. And I don't think people can comfortable with that. Maybe we should get an explanation of are we talking about something that is going to be better than what we have now. And the issue that you mentioned yesterday, Chairperson, of the consumers. Actually, it was not yourself, but you intervened when somebody was making a presentation that the set of box might be going to be used by a certain category of people, and those who can afford can use the other, are these the things that we're talking about, that MNET is talking about, the alternative that they're talking about, and what would be the difference then, because you can read here that MNET is talking about affordability also somewhere here. And yesterday I did ask a question on what was said, but that in actual fact, it's the other countries are even paying lesser than what is the cost is going to be of the set of boxes. That must be clear to us. We want to understand exactly what are we saying so that maybe can be explained by DOC, because yesterday we didn't have the DG here, and I think the DG is ready today to answer some of the questions. That would be emanating from what I'm getting from MNET. We want to know whether is this true, that the cost effect, has not been considered, because what we're talking about, the set of boxes might even be, the cost might be more, if we look at the prices that have been put up and the other countries are paying less. And it says here, decoders retailing for between $35 to $40.
jargon here, I didn't see what this means. The FDA content is free and encrypted. You see, now you start thinking, what is it exactly? Because here, I thought the government is concerned about the low earners, the people who cannot afford really, and coming from the previously disadvantaged areas. And most important, you are talking about the rural area. That's what you are concerned about. Now, is it what MNET is giving us, is it addressing also, you know, that category? On page 20 here, I had something on that. The challenges that challenges of Centec. If you go to they say the intention that Kata is taken to territory. These are the challenges that we need. The second bullet also says delay in publishing these regulations means any commercial DTT launch would be at risk. What does that mean? Is it talking about the publishing of the regulations pertaining the DTT launch? Maybe if someone can go deeper into that to explain to us. And the risk that is mentioned here of LABC TV and MNET who have had difficulty in concluding negotiations with Centec. Those are all challenges that maybe you can elaborate more. The other thing that I wanted to talk about, I think I've mentioned my concerns and what I needed clarity on. So far, Jefferson, I think I'll just stop there, and maybe as responses are coming, one can engage more. Thank you, Jefferson.
Hello, Machine.
Thank you, Jefferson. I just wanted a quick question that I forgot to ask previously. On your slide 20, you talked about chicken or beef. this one about the impact of the high tariff rates and that you might be forced off Centec to other options for transmission. Can you explain what those other options would be? Obviously, this would, I'm assuming we need broadband. Are we talking about cable TV, all that sort of thing? Thank you.
Thank you. Any other hands before I hand to MTN? MTN. don't respond on the issue of Makeri. It's a refugee economy. Charles did it out. The regulator must tell us what does it mean, Makeri, in the digital environment. MNET?
Thank you, Chairman. And thank you for all the questions. I will try as best I can to run through these questions as they were posed to us and answer them as best we can. If we leave something out or we've overlooked something, if you can please just alert us to that. What I will also do, where a question I think is more relevant for one of my colleagues to answer, I will pass it on to one of my colleagues.
I can see you distribute the work very well. Equal distribution. We must
indeed
learn from you.
Called the art of delegation. And I'm very good at it. Right. Yes, and I was going to say something tongue-in-cheek, but I'll buy that. Right, let's start with the first question, which was on page 23, and there was clarity required about the MNET box and that it's different from other broadcasters in that we already have a box. So if I may explain, MNET is a licensed service provider and has licensed frequency currently as an analog broadcaster. So we have an analog box which we last sold to our customers probably about 10 years ago. That box is completely outdated, no longer available anywhere in the world, and our subscribers at MNET, and that is to be distinguished from DSTV subscribers. I think that distinction needs to be made. DSTV, the boxes which they provide, and by the way, the words box, set-top box, and decoders are interchangeable, and forgive us for if we confuse anybody with the terminology, but DSTV boxes, so to speak, are in fact already digital. And therefore, anyone who currently has a DSTV decoder has no need to go out and buy any other box. Okay, their television is already digital. They do nothing. It is the people who currently get free-to-air services.
I can see the sight of relief from this.
Yeah. Free-to-air services who have no way of transferring their analog signal to digital, as well as the MNET subscriber base, which at this stage is small relative to DSTV, simply because that base has been declining over the years, that we have not been able to service them properly whilst waiting for this transition. So if there's any confusion there, it's the MNET subscriber base, not the DSTV subscriber base, that have all outdated boxes for the purposes of pay television, who now have to go out and buy another box, which is the box that we as MNET wanted to provide as part of our launch. That is the box that we will be promoting. So our existing subscribers have to go out and buy a new box, and obviously we are also hoping to attract new subscribers. I hope that explains that particular question. The second question was about integrated TVs and whether these TVs will be local or imported and what is the significance of those TVs. I think there are hand over, Dave. Are you happy to answer that one?
Thanks, Patricia. There was a request just to explain what an IDTV is, an integrated TV set. In the old days, TV sets currently in your home is typically a tube TV set, an aspect ratio of 4x3, so the screen is a bit square, and in that TV set is an analog receiver. You plug an aerial into it, you scan the VHF and UHF band, and you'll pick up SABC, ETV, and Soweto TV and the community services. An IDTV is exactly the same analogy as an analog TV set. It's a digital flat screen TV set, but most TV sets or flat screens out there have no receiver in it. You plug a computer into it, you plug an external decoder into it, you plug a USB into it to see photographs, but it cannot receive any digital TV service. An IDTV integrates the decoder or the converter that converts a digital signal into a signal that's displayed on the TV set. So an IDTV has a built-in DVB-T2 receiver in it. You plug your aerial in, hit the scan button, it scans all the digital frequencies, picks up all the multiplexes and all the channels within that multiplex. So an IDTV at the moment, many of them are available in DVB-T1. T2 is a new standard. Samsung, LG, Hisense, Panasonic, all the big brands have DVB-T2 IDTVs available. A lot of them are coming to the country. Some of them are in manufacture or knock them up in South Africa to bypass import duties and tariffs, but they will become more and more available in retail. They are costly. A device like that, to be honest, costs maybe $200, and you convert that to rands. It's a substantial cost for a flat-screen TV with a receiver built in it. But that cost will come down like the cost of decoders, and as we said, 42,000 TVs are sold every month in South Africa, replacing old TVs, base growing. Once that cost comes down and they're available, I'm sure a lot of people start purging those things in the light of using that as a receive for DVB-T2 or DTT. Just to clarify Patricia's comment, there are many words explaining what a decoder is. It's a decoder, a set-top box, a converter, an adapter we've been speaking about. They all do the same thing. And I think maybe going forward, what we should recommend is have one common word that you start using and not all these many words. But that device converts the digital signal coming off the terrestrial transmitter network to an analog signal that goes into your existing TV set. All it does is converts digital to analog.
I thought I was using all these terminals to confuse her anyway. But it's okay.
Right. The third question related to the training and the education levels of the customer service representatives. So, Dave, I think you're best equipped to answer that as well.
So, honourable members, this customer service representative really came out of our trial. It's a recommendation we gave as evidence to the DOC to look at three things: to create sustainable jobs, which is important, to support and make sure that digital terrestrial migration is successful, and not only successful for the migration, but afterwards it's sustained and working correctly and doesn't land up like other sagas that are happening in South Africa at the moment, and to make DTT a success. So really, that person that we're looking at that's going to go into the community has to live in the community. I would imagine, and I'm talking about context here, is a person 25 years and older, male or female, that has typically a week's training that looks at human interaction and customer service skills. That person is going into people's homes. They need to be trustworthy. They need to respect people's homes because they're going to be sitting in their homes, connecting up or fixing their DTT setup. The person will need some technical skills, and it is very, very elementary, level one type technology background. What an aerial is, which way should it point? If it doesn't work, how do I measure the signal strength on the decoder menu? So they need to know the menu structures of the decoders. And if it doesn't work, how do I escalate the problem to get an installer or send the decoder back for repair? So it is very basic technical skills about how the remote works, how the menu structure in the decoder works, what should I be looking for in the decoder, how do I do a software upgrade in the decoder, change batteries on the remote, and help people through the menu structures of the decoder. So really, the recommendation, it's working for us in Soweto. Sure, it's only for 60 people, but it's the only way we can support 60 people. And if you're going to stop moving millions of people into this in rural areas where they've had no experience with any digital technology before, we firmly believe we think it's the only way to do it, is to put these people in the communities. I've had a number of sessions with the DOC, Dr. Wessa upstairs, around rural development and land reform, are very interested in using existing people inside the communities to upskill them to do this job. So when it comes to pay, I can't answer that. Sure, the people have to be paid. They need a cell phone so they can escalate and they can receive calls from the community. But how they get paid and things like that, we're developing that with the DOC at the moment on the 4th of December when there's an e-skills workshop going ahead. And we'll gladly hand over our curriculum and recommendation of what this job looks like and the type of person required.
Right, moving on to the next question, which was the question of the set-top boxes and the differences between those that are silver, those that are black, and any other colour that there may be. Once again, I think it's very important to make the distinction between MNET as a company and MultiChoice as a company. MultiChoice is a holding company that within its structures owns many companies, of which MNET is but one. So when we talk about the other set-top boxes or decoders or whatever we wish to call them that are currently out there, those are DSTV digital decoders. They are not part and parcel of MNET at all. And the different colouring and the different styles and models for that entity is simply a timing aspect of when these upgraded versions are rolled out. But as time goes by, you know, that particular business will roll out other decoders which will have, you know, different functionality, et cetera, and which will look completely different. You know, I represent MNET. I have a mandate to speak for MNET. I cannot really speak on behalf of DSTV. It's a separate company to ours, but that is my understanding of where all those different colours come in, because I have owned some of them myself. Then moving on to the question about Centec and the options, and I think this question was asked more than once, so that let me just deal with it here. What other options are there? And I would obviously like to ask Anon perhaps to elaborate on this. And this was linked into whether we are sympathetic with regards to what government is trying to do and whether we are assisting in any way. I really would like to state right up front that from an MNET perspective, we've tried our level best to work with all the stakeholders. We have been at the forefront of really wanting to make this digital migration a success, wanting to make it work. And in fact, when this process started off a few years back, I think it was about 4 years ago, when the draft regulations came out, we made a proposal that what we were willing to do at great cost to ourselves was to in fact do what was called a hard switch over, which means that we would have in a very, very short space of time time, converted our existing subscribers to the digital encoders, and we would have handed back a digital dividend. In fact, we would have handed the digital dividend back now. It would have been at least 3.5 years ago already, because it would have taken 6 months. That's how long we worked out it would take us to convert all of our subscribers to digital. So I really do believe, and we do have evidence, that we have really tried to make all these things happen quickly, and to work with all the stakeholders concerned to the very best of our abilities. I think having said that, we must also put on record that we also obviously have some sympathy for ICASA, because they have many stakeholders that they have to consider. They have multiple rounds of consultations. They do need to take everyone's opinions into account, and I think their role is a pretty difficult one. But at the same time, I think it would be very conducive, and it was mentioned here today, that the stakeholders need to pull together, and they must find solutions to this together, because we are all interdependent on each other. One of the players cannot move without the other's support. Otherwise, we will not come to any kind of conclusion. So I think that is important. So just to note, we are very sympathetic to the government and to ICASA in this process, and we really would like to see things happen very quickly, hence our original proposal that we would have done it in 6 months. On the issue of the other option, yes, the other option is one that MNET has considered. And Anon, would you like to elaborate on what that option is?
Thank you. The reference was into the slide where we said that the SABC, ETV, and MNET were in discussions, and we need to reach agreement on tariffs. And we indicated that one of the difficulties we had is that if we look at the analog, we look at the digital, there seems to be a 3.8 times difference in figures that we are seeing. And that we would, if we fail to come to agreement, we are also looking at the other options. The other options are not broadband or that. The fact is that the broadcasters, ETV and MNET, both have the electronic communication network service license, the same as which Centec holds, Orbicom. In the case of MNET, is also a broadcast signal distributor. So the real thing would be is that if you're looking at the costs which are provided to you by Centec, and you think that you can do it cheaper, that is an option that you have to consider, that of self-provisioning. And the Act, the Electronic Communications Act, allows any broadcaster to self-provide their own signal if they do not use another signal distributor or licensed signal distributor. So that is an option that one would have to consider, is that when we're looking at the figures supplied to us, could we do it cheaper ourselves? And that becomes the factor in the final decision. If we look at the fact is that what has Centec done, Centec has rolled out a transmitter network. That transmitter network, or MUX2, will be using a selection of frequencies. Those frequencies are not owned by Centec. Those frequencies would be licensed to ETV and MNET. And that's MNET and ETV, if they wish, can use another signal distributor. The cool thing, of course, is the cost of doing that and the time involved, because Centec already has a rollout network. If we were to roll out our own network, we would obviously then have to gain access to high sites, purchase transmitter equipment, and there's a whole cost entailed to that as well. But as we indicated, that's an option. It's your fallback position if you cannot reach an agreement around the tariffs, and that's why the tariffs are a reasonable tariff is very important. And one that I believe that ICASA said is also transparent. How do you arrive to these figures that you're providing to us? These discussions are underway. We have had initial meetings. Perhaps Dave can even speak a bit to that. We have had initial meetings with Centec. We did indicate the problems. They indicated that they're going to go away and come back to us. So it's still all under negotiation and agreement. But as I indicated, we do have a fallback position if we don't reach agreement.
Thank you, Anon. The next question that arose was regarding the consumer awareness program and what needed to be done about that, because obviously that will impact on take-up. So, Calvo, would you like to comment on that?
Thanks, Patricia. Honourable Member. On the issue of communication, in our interactions with the Department of Communications, we've reiterated this point quite a number of times, even way back as far as this is longer, that communication is going to be one of the key areas that will make sure that this project becomes successful. And what we proposed in a number of forums was that there need to be centrally coordinated for us to be able to make sure that we send the same message consistent across all broadcasters. And later on, with regard to the meetings that we currently have with the Department of Communications from time to time on the state of readiness, there has been an attempt to formulate a subcommittee that is dealing with communication from time to time. We have given input into some of the documents that have been drafted on the DOC side, and we have noted that DOC said they will be phasing in this communication fora in a gradual manner. We have seen some of the addresses, some members have already mentioned that there have been some communication here and there in the newspapers, but we are hopeful that the DOC will hear our call in terms of making sure that this critical area is fully addressed in terms of their communication offering going forward.
Thank you. The next question related to the community service representatives, the question of who's going to pay, where does that budget lie, and why would that system be preferable to, let's say, a call centre? Perhaps, Aylon, you would like to comment on that?
Well, I think that in terms of that question, it does address the fact that who's going to pay for them. Well, we can't talk to the 24,000 jobs. I think from the MS side, this is a model that's worked very well. So for those communities where MNEC would be rolling out, we'd be looking at implementing it, and those community service representatives would be funded from MNEC. But that would be specifically looking at the rollout of our service to our subscribers and the community areas that they are in, as well as the LSM groupings that they fall into.
Thank you. Thank you for the comments relating to the incorporation into the community areas and the ward councils. That's very good advice. Thank you. Moving on to the issue of TV licenses. Once again, I'm not in a position to speak on behalf of DSTV and MultiChoice. My mandate is MNET. And so I'm not really in a position to comment on that other than to say, Mr. Chairman, if I may, that we do have somebody here in the room today who is mandated to speak for MultiChoice, and that is Clarissa Mack. So with permission, if she may address us. Alternatively, what I can say and that I am aware of is that we obviously believe that as a body and an entity from a DSTV point of view, that we are not in the business of being a collection agent. And I know that other models of funding for the public broadcaster have been submitted. But with permission, if Clarissa may address us on that topic. Honourable Chairperson?
The regulator must respond to what is the regulation of mask case.
Yeah, I'm not sorry. The topic I'm addressing, you mentioned me I should not talk about mask carry. I'm going to leave that out in my responses. I'm talking about the issue of TV licences.
No. That one can respond by taking into consideration that in other countries, this arrangement is commercial. In South Africa, it's forced. So it cannot be equated with other countries. That's the issue I'm trying to go to.
Yeah.
In other countries, commercial arrangement. Here, SABC is pushed into that environment. That's why I'm saying you need to a balancing act around that. But, yeah, she can.
No, that's fine. But I specifically wanted to talk about the TV license situation, Clarissa. Thanks.
The issue of TV licensees and DSTV collecting TV licensees for the SABC has come up before. Currently, the obligation is on the individual citizen to pay their license fees. There's no obligation on MultiChoice. As indicated, we would not want to be a collection agency. There's a variety of problems that crop up. One, who is going to pay for the administration related to the collection? Is there going to be a debate about how much that is? And subscribers would not be willing to divulge their personal information to a third party. We would need their express written representations, both in terms of the CBA and POPI, to do so. So there's a load of problems around that issue. It is not our core business, so we wouldn't, as a commercial entity, want to be an agent for a state-owned enterprise to collect license fees. It's much more complex than people think, and I think the obligation is where it currently lies, where it should lie, and that is with the individual citizen. And we do believe that people should pay their license fees, and I'm happy to say I do.
No, thank you. It's a regulatory matter. The
multi-host can say MNET whatever they want to. This is a regulatory matter, will be resolved through a regulation. And where that regulation comes, it doesn't matter who feels what. At that point, the matter will be addressed. It's a regulatory matter. Because the regulation now is quiet before, it was pointing that there can be a commercial arrangement. But now the regulation is silent. And it's a regulatory matter, it's not between MNET anyway. So if we can just leave it at that, it will be dealt with somewhere else. MNET, you can follow it?
Thank you very much for that. Moving on to, there was a question about content and the repeat situation. Now, I would really like to address that. It's my pet topic. What I would like to say is the following. Let's take the genre of content that is called movies. If you took, or if anyone took, or if a broadcaster took, every single movie that was made in Hollywood in a year, and you put all those movies on channel, you would not have enough movies to fill your channel for the entire year. Because what happens in Hollywood is they make approximately 200 to 220 movies a year. That's what comes out of the six major studios. And as we know, many of those movies are failures. They don't work particularly well. They're not particularly popular. And if you are producing a channel of content, you have to produce that channel for 24 hours a day, 365 days of the year, and a movie is on average about 2 hours. So you would need, if you wanted never to repeat anything, you would need thousands of movies, which no one is producing anywhere in the world. So that would become totally logistically very, very difficult. So what happens is, in a multi-channel environment, and this is perhaps where South African consumers need to be educated because many of them have not really had multiple channels on which to choose, but in overseas markets they have for a very long time. In a multi-channel environment, what you do is when you are looking at your TV viewing, you do not necessarily watch a channel vertically. What you do is you scroll through the channels horizontally to see what is that you want to watch at a particular time. So if it's 8 o'clock on a Monday night, and let's say you have multiple channels, so for example, in the future in a DVT environment, the SABC could have up to 20 channels. So if you were watching SABC channels, you would scroll through those channels at 8 o'clock at night, and you would have 20 choices of what you could watch at any given time. And so what would happen is, if you missed a particular piece of content, or a particular movie, or you missed a particular news item that you wanted to see, you would know that would then probably reappear again at a later time on another channel or in a later time slot. And what many of the overseas broadcasters have done very successfully is they've done their scheduling in such a way that their consumers know with some degree of certainty what will be showing at what time. So if you've been out tonight, you've missed something, you know that you will see it tomorrow night. And what statistics show us is that in that multiple channel environment where you watch television horizontally and not vertically, the uptake of watching certain, be it movies or be it whatever type of content you're attracted to, be it documentaries, is actually it's extremely high when you show it again for other people's convenience. If you only ever had to show it once and you've missed it, it's gone. And you will not see it again. So that is actually the benefit of having a repeat pattern in a multiple channel environment. It really does help for convenience. The other factor to bear in mind is that contractually, many broadcasters, when they acquire or license content, do have certain contractual obligations as to the number of screenings that a particular piece of content needs to have, and that also needs to be factored in. So I hope I've answered that question. Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions, remaining member? Say? Fine. No. Anything remaining from my side?
So honorable chairperson, if that is the end of our presentation, that's absolutely fine. There were one or two other questions here which we haven't had time to address, but I'll gladly submit a ever since.
No, you can address them. Or you can address them now.
Can I address them now,
please? I'll quickly address.
All right. Let me try and address them as quickly as I can, because some of them have been covered.
Depends how quick is your quick.
How quick is my quick? Okay. There was a question about whose transmitter it was in Soweto and what is going to happen to that transmitter, Carver?
Okay. Yes, that's all. Okay.
You see, the trend that you introduced, that myself and Stain always come at the end. Now it has been taken up by the entities. You know, you said everything has been done. My questions are not answered. And I thought, okay, is this what it is? I know what am I going to do.
I will say it's a threat. You can respond quick, the real quick.
I'll respond quickly on the transmitter in Soweto for honorable member. When you did visit the Soweto trial, I think it was a year ago, we were running a transmitter network consisting of Orbicom transmitters and Centec transmitters, which we're still doing today. And the people in Soweto were receiving their telegram service from the Brixton Tower in Auckland Park from Centec, and also from the tower in Hillbrow, the JSM Tower.
The second one?
The question regarding the set-off box on page 5, hopefully we've clarified that with our explanations around the IDTV and how that will be rolling out. Then it was also the question about the DSTV boxes being used as an alternative, and some people thinking that if they have a box, they don't have to pay a TV license. But as the Honourable Chairperson has mentioned, that will have to be dealt with under regulation. And then we come to the question about the countries. And there was a question regarding what lessons could be learned from other countries, in particular Namibia and Mozambique. Dave, do you have any comments on that?
So those countries are not doing their own migration as yet. They've got commercial operators that have deployed EGT in their country. Chinese operators, South African operators, African operators. So they haven't gone through this process that we're actually discussing today in Parliament, is doing the migration themselves. But by having commercial operate in the country, benefits that country, because automatically the awareness, the marketing, the communication gets spread around that country on behalf of the commercial operator. So when country does migrate to digital themselves, that awareness campaign and knowledge and understanding already is there, which is absolutely paramount. From a communications perspective, to tell people, what is DGE, why do I need it, what are the benefits, where do I pick up my set-top box, when does it switch on, when does it switch off, and how do I escalate problems. That's critical, that.
Before, we are not left behind that much. Although what lay, that's the problem. Marotua,
sensitive to the issue of time. No, what follows after we've had this is that is this comparison then legit? Maybe we'll discuss about that of countries being compared to South Africa.
Okay. See, yesterday I said 80 of the 52 countries in Africa, they are opted actually to 2020, they are not in 2015. So that gives a clear picture where Africa is. So, and sometimes this comparison, you see that South Africa opted them better, to do things better, earlier, and so on. But more than two-thirds of the countries in Africa, they are beyond 2015, in terms of their undertaking in 2006. If you go back and read the 2006 ITU, they are beyond 2015, they are at 2020 actually. We just strengthen ourselves as a country to say we will do it another thing. So that will give you about the context of Africa is 80. They are at that level. Only 22 remain on the other side of the region and so on. But probably it's a matter which we can embed it at another level in terms of the comparison, whether you're comparing apple with apple or comparing something else, apple with a banana and other things and so on. But sometimes it's easy to throw name of countries and compare, whereas when you go into detail, some of these countries actually these things are commercial, it's not even as we're doing here. So people, they don't say that. They just throw the countries. But when you go into those countries, you see that it's led commercially. not the way it is done. Or sometimes it helps to compare, but go deep and understand. And that in each country what is happening, or that you compare correctly. And not just to do that. But yeah, I think your response was spot on, what you were saying in terms of not actually, but something else is happening. I think that is a fair response. And honest you can get in this conversation. Thanks very much. CEO?
Honourable Chairperson, I think there's just one last question then that we would like to answer, and that was the question around the ITU and what will happen if we're late. And I think, Anon, if you can answer that, please. Thank you. And then we're done, and I think we've covered most of all the questions. Thank you.
Yes, there's a question around the ITU date and also the countries which have set the date of 2013. So a very quick one, I think that the Chairperson's actually answered that for me, is that that in the ITU GO6 there was a footnote, and there were countries who on that footnote indicated that they would only migrate in 2020. And then the other countries, and I should say it's not a switch off date, it's the end of protection date. So after 2015, the countries which are on 2015, if they haven't, they're no longer protected from interference from their neighbours, but that only impacts on them if their neighbours have gone digital. The similar thing within regards to SADC is that SADC ministerial indicated that 2013 would be the analog switch of date for the region. My understanding is that there's another SADC ministerial planned where they will revise that date from 2013 to 2015. So 2015 is going to be the date in the region. And as a region, you do have to decide what the date will be, because if any of your neighbors happen to go to digital, they could cause interference for your analog. Also, you go to digital and the neighbors don't, there might be also interference issues. So it's very critical as a region to coordinate around the analog switch-off date.
Thank you. That's the whole story. You see, we're not alone. We said 2011 was missed. Kenya, Nigeria, they said 2012. I'm not sure that we missed. So now we might move to 2015, but that does not mean that there must be convergence in terms of the process, because there are also issue of sustainability of other people which is at stake. The more we delay, we cause other unnecessary harm and to other companies and manufacturers. As the offer, Emma, thanks very much. The short notice and everything, and your understanding combined, everything combined. Well done in terms of the distribution of the work. All the best.
What CEOs do, Honourable Chairperson?
Honourable Chairperson, we didn't distribute, we did everything yourself. Centralization. You suffer? I know you can't, but we've got the outstanding issue. Don't worry, we'll deal with it. Yes, we have got the market, but now we are exhausting. We'll mask sharing. We still have a mask money in the mask sharing. But let's ask you first. Of mass care is a bigger debate. It's not just a likely issue, that it's a bigger debate.